This is Frank Hymas recording an oral history interview with Des Gray. Today is the 27th of September 2005, and this interview is being recorded at Putney, New South Wales. This is tape number MPFH 28 Side A, and this is for the Millers Point Oral History Project. Des, and people that might listen to this tape later on might want to know a bit about you. So before we get on to your life at Millers Point, can you tell me, for identification purposes, what's your full name, firstly?
Desmond William Peter Gray.
Oh, nice lot of names, isn't it?
After your grandparents, I guess.
Right. And when were you born, Des?
In Sydney, Millers Point, 1944.
All right, okay. And was your family living in Millers Point when you were born?
Yes, both living in Kent Street at the time when I was born.
What number do you remember?
No, I don't remember the number. I know the house, but I can't remember what the number it was.
Right. Which part of Kent Street was it?
Not far from St. Bridget's Church, on that side also.
Okay. Was that a church you used to frequent as well?
Yes, quite a lot. My mother was very religious, very devout Catholic.
All right. And your dad as well?
No, he wasn't, no. But he made us attend church.
Right, okay. Tell me a little bit about your parents, a bit of background. That'd be good.
Mum come from the Gardeners. I don't know if you heard of them or not. She had about four sisters and three brothers. She worked in a box factory down in Druitt Street, Sydney, when she was first married. And then because she had so many children, she just stayed and raised all the children. And Dad was a wharf labourer all his life. Worked on barges originally. That's how he became the fireman deckhand in 1927. But then he left that and went on to the wharves because there was supposed to be more money in it, but apparently not, because they're always on strike.
How many children were there in the family?
Altogether, I lost two sisters, which I never knew of, but I had three brothers and three sisters. The two sisters I never ever knew of, the older ones, they died young.
Do you know of what causes?
I only found this out recently, about 3 years ago. And no, I really haven't found out what they died of. Never knew I had two other sisters.
You never knew?
No. One of my elder sisters only told me, 3 years ago.
So your mother never told you?
No.
How do you feel about that?
Nothing. No.
Doesn't disturb you particularly?
No, not at all.
It's so long ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
So your mother was Catholic, your father wasn't. At that stage of the game in Millers Point, was there a division between the two religions, or did they get on fairly well with each other?
They got on very, very well together. Yeah, there's about half and half, Catholics and Church of England. Most of my friends were Church of England, I guess.
Right. What was it like growing up in Millers Point? What sort of childhood memories have you got?
Well, there was a lot to do because of the wharves, and that was our main playground. We just went down the wharves, just either fishing, or climbing up on the ships and playing on the ships themselves, getting chased by the seamen and jumping off the side of the ship and swim ashore. But mostly on the ships we played and around the wharves. There was King George V playground up in York Street North. We played basketball up there a lot. Paddle tennis up against the wall. I suppose we spent a lot of time there. There's old Mr. Burns, he was the... I suppose you call him the headmaster of the playground. I don't know what they called him. But he was a lovely old chap.
Did all the kids play there?
Yes, everyone played at St George V playground. Because in them days there was other council playgrounds around. This was Piermont, Woolloomooloo, Campbelltown, Campertown. And we used to play competition against them, basketball.
Right. Were you a basketballer yourself?
Yes, loved it, yeah.
Right. Who taught you basketball?
Mr. Burns, the, I don't know what you call him, coach.
I've heard stories about an American that came during the war and taught the kids how to play basketball, apparently.
Yes, I can recollect the Harlem Globetrotters came up there once and played basketball with us.
Wow.
On the courts, and they were asphalt courts. They weren't, wooden timber.
Right. Were you a good scorer?
Oh, I played guard, so, yeah, I guess I was. But we got picked to play in the under-16 New South Wales squad. I can't even remember what year it would have been. But in them days, the parents had to pay for it, to send the children down to Tasmania to play, but my parents never had the money, so I never went. I got a tracksuit out of it, but I never ever went.
Tasmania?
Yeah. Oh. Under 16s. For New South Wales.
Okay. Well, you must have been pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
So, did they ever get close to winning any tournaments?
We used to win quite a lot, yeah, just locally with the other playgrounds, council playgrounds.
So can you describe it? It's all changed now. The King George V doesn't look like it used to. What was it like in those days? Can you describe it for me?
Well, in them days, it was just all asphalt and swings, slippy dips, like for the younger ones. There's two basketball courts, two paddle tennis courts, and inside the building itself, there was all sorts of games you could play, things like that. Oh, it was a great place to be.
What kind of games could you play inside?
Oh, what kids would play when they were young. I can't remember what we played now, but there was always something. If it was a wet day, you all went inside and done things. And there's always people there supervising you.
Well, going back to your family, I believe your great-grandfather came from Scotland. He had something to do with the waterside too. Can you tell me about him?
Never ever knew him, but he was a Scottish captain of a ship. He used to run the North Coast line from Sydney to Morpeth on the old sailing ships. But I never ever met him. It's only what had been told by my elder sisters.
Are they the big clippers, the big sailing ships?
Yeah, I guess they would have been, yeah.
So you're talking like about the 1880s or 90s, aren't you?
Yeah.
So there was seafaring in the family, was there?
Yes, it is, and it's gone right through the whole family.
What, your kids as well?
Well, my brothers, I all went to sea. My son does. He's a ferry boat captain on the Manly Ferries.
All right. So it's in your blood, is it?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Tell me a little bit more about your father and his work as a waterside worker.
Oh, well, he's just an ordinary everyday wharfie, like half a Miller's Point was, I guess. Didn't get much work in them days in the 40s because they were always on strike.
What were the strikes usually about?
Better wages, better conditions.
Do you know anything about the conditions as they were on the wharves in those days?
Yeah, they were pretty hard. They worked very hard. And I mean, today they just wouldn't stand for occupational health and safety, the conditions they worked in. They just couldn't stand it.
How bad would they get, the conditions?
How did they get them?
How bad would they get?
Well, it's just the conditions they worked in. It's the hard manual work, such as wool, carting big bales of wool around. I wouldn't know what they weighed, but they had big trolleys and there were massive big steel wheels. And it was hard work. And, of course, you had Pig Iron Bob Menzies, who ladled all the pig iron on the ships during the war days or after the war. And they did that manually by hand. There was no machinery.
What, just shoveling it?
Picking it up by hand, throwing it.
The actual iron?
Big ingots of iron.
You'd have to be a pretty strong guy for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, my father was only a little fellow. He was only about 5'3".
He must have been tough.
Must have been. He had to be to have all them children.
How long would it take to load a ship, say, with coal and those kind of primitive methods that they were using?
Them days, weeks. A couple of weeks, you know. A ship would come in and it'd sit there for 2 weeks, maybe. Not like today, they're there less than 12 hours, some of them, 24, and they're gone again.
So, if I can imagine it, there's a whole bunch of men all throwing the iron in by hand. Is that how it was?
Yeah, it was loaded into buckets and taken off with the ship's crane. In them days, there was no wharf cranes, it was all ship's cranes. Loaded down into the hull of the ship, then they'd have to unload it out of the buckets and stack it down in the hull of the ship.
Stack it. It wasn't just dropped by bucket.
No, it wasn't dropped. No.
So it must have been...
They have to move it by hand.
It must have been very hot conditions in summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, very hot, yeah. Then there was flour. They used to load flour, bags of flour. Each man had to put it on his shoulder, take it up and put it down a slide into the ship. And there'd be another gang of wharfies down there picking it up and stacking it in the hull of the ship. And that was very hard work.
Right, all manual labour, yeah. Right. There's that the same pig iron that was sent to Japan before the war? Japan used against us?
Yes, yeah.
That's why they call them Pig Iron Bob,
isn't it? We got it back in razor blades.
Right.
And cars.
Now, your father worked for a time on the Samson, didn't he?
Yeah, it was an old crane barge, a very large crane barge. Used to moor down at Erskine Street Wharf, which is no longer there anymore. And he was a deckhand on that. That's before he joined the wolves.
There was an incident involving that ship, wasn't there?
Well, I don't know if I should say it or not, but there was me and a few of my mates, we down there one day, it was a weekend, the barge was tied up, so we let it go, let all the ropes go, and it drifted over into Pyrmont. I forget the name of the ship that was there, it was a big passenger ship. It went very close to hitting it.
I believe that was the motor vessel Himalaya.
Yeah, it could have been. I can't remember what the name of it was nowadays. Yeah, it could have been the old Himalaya.
So you're responsible for this particular prank, are you?
Yeah, part of it.
You and a few mates. So they found it again, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, some old tug came along and pushed it back over to Erskine Street.
So your father must have been in the union, was he? A union man?
Yes, he was. Very strong union man.
Right. So did they get their conditions that they were fighting for?
Yes, they did, because the men today enjoy them conditions that the older guys fought for.
Was it a long, hard battle?
Yes. Yes, he was home most days, I guess, when he was on strike, naturally. And we used to go down to Sussex Street and pick up things like bags of flour or cornflakes or whatever it was they were handing out, because they weren't getting paid, and the union helped the families out, yeah, with food.
Really? Because they weren't earning anything, you mean?
Yeah, they weren't getting paid, so they used to get handouts.
Do you remember the names of the union bosses in those days?
No, I don't. I should do, but I don't.
Was it was the union very left-inspired?
Yeah, it was.
Would you go as far as to say they were communists?
I won't answer that.
You can't?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I believe Jim Healey was a union boss at one stage.
Yeah, very strong Milton man, yes.
Do you remember him at all?
Oh, vaguely. Yeah, so many years ago, wasn't it?
Did your father ever tell you stories about his life on the wharves?
Oh, no, not really. Not so much as his work itself, but we used to go down and watch him work. And he used to listen to the radio every night, because the pickup had come over the radio when they were going to get their jobs the next day. And he'd walk from Millers Point to Pyrmont to do a job, because there was, well, there was even any transport going across that way. He'd walk the Hungry Mile, pick up work.
Right. When did that name, Hungry Mile, actually come into use?
I don't know what year it was, but it's because men walked the Hungry Mile looking for a job. That's how it got its name, because all the wharves, they walked it every day, and people would stand there and they'd hire two, and the other six would have to go home.
Right. And how did your father get his work? Are you through the radio? Did it call up a number or something?
As far as I can remember, yes, on the radio every night, or was it every day? I forgot now. Every night, I think it was 5 o'clock. They said they got their orders over the radio. They all had a number each, and they come over the radio. Gang 421 would go to 17 Pyrmont or something like that.
Right, and he was a member of a gang then, was he, your father?
Yeah, they were always in a gang.
Right, okay, interesting. Now, your father was a great fisherman, I believe. Tell me about some of his fishing exploits.
Yes, he was a good fisherman. Central Steps, which we call the Metal Wharf. Have you ever heard of that before? He fished off that wharf for many years, because I'd come home from school and get out and catch small yellowtail. And then when he knocked off work, he'd come down and get the yellowtail, and then he'd fish for the big ones. And he'd bring home jewfish as tall as him. And as I said, he was 5'3", and that's how big these fish were.
Incredible. In Sydney Harbour?
Yeah, in Sydney Harbour on Central Steps. Or the Met.
Did he have a boat to catch them with?
Not in them days. He eventually built one, because he broke his leg at work. So he decided to build a rowing boat. But he built it in my sister's bedroom. And when it was finished, he couldn't get it out, because it wouldn't fit through the door or the window. So he had to pull it half to pieces and then take it out into the backyard, which is a very small yard, about 2 foot wide, and put it back together again. It was only made of ply.
Is it actually building a boat inside a bedroom?
Yeah.
That was the only place he could do it, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, apparently. So I don't know where the sisters slept that when he was building. I can't remember now.
He got a bit out of hand, did it, with the size?
Yeah.
He got carried away, did he?
Yeah. But he built it while he had this broken leg. A bale of wool fell on him, actually.
Oh. Mm. Well, tell me about that incident. What do you know about that?
Oh, I was only very tiny, young. That he got hurt at work. A bale of wool fell on him and broke his leg. He's off work for 6 months, I guess.
What about compensation or anything? Was there anything like that then?
Well, I suppose it was around in them days. I don't know what it paid in those days, but we always had a feed on the table.
So your mum must have been quite a miracle woman to look after seven children, feed them all. How did she manage, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. She just enjoyed it, I think. Yeah, she liked it.
So what kind of food did you eat in the family?
Quite well. We ate a lot of fish because of Dad catching it all the time. Sunday was a great day. That was baked dinner day. That's when you got your passion fruit and ice cream for dessert. And you went up the street after. Especially on a Sunday, you had a block of ice cream, a brick of ice cream, which was 2 shillings. It was expensive. And Mum would give you a glass. They take up and you got threepence worth of passion fruit flavouring to go with it.
Where did you buy it from?
A little corner shop up the road, yeah.
All right. Were there many of those little shops?
Yeah, quite a lot, yeah.
Do you remember the people who ran them or what they were?
Yeah.
Where they were?
Yes, old Charlie Conran. There's a Greek family on the corner. I can't think of what their names were now. Shops, the same shop's still there. And there was John Holly. He was the deli. You'd buy biscuits by the pound in a paper bag. You wouldn't buy them out of a packet from Woolworths. Everything was weighed and given to you. I remember one day it was Mother's Day and I went and bought my mum a pound of salt for Mother's Day. I was thinking it cost me a penny, I think.
Yeah. Was she happy with it?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, it was something useful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, any other shops around? Was there a barber shop or a butcher?
Yeah, there's a barber shop, old Brew Lewis the barber. He'd cut your hair for a shilling, with a basin cut, of course. And he'd sell your comics. You swapped one and paid a penny. You gave him one plus a penny and he'd give you another comic back. And if your mother didn't know, you used to buy Old Chum cigarettes off him for a penny each.
What's Old Chum? Is it the brand?
It was a brand of cigarettes in them days, Old Chum. They're not around today. And you'd go and buy a cigarette off him for a penny. He'd sell it to underage kids, naturally, 10, 12 years of age.
And those days there's no problem?
Well, no one seemed to worry about it.
Right. Penny a cigarette, was it?
Penny a cigarette, yeah.
All right, that's fairly expensive,
wasn't it? Was, yeah.
Mm. Penny was something you could buy.
My word.
Really? Right.
Rube Lewis was a Jew, so he was making money.
Yes, I've heard about Rube already.
Have you?
And some of the others, yeah. They said he was, he was up to more than just cutting hair. What else do you think he was up to?
Oh, I don't know. I've never heard.
Into SB betting and things, I've heard.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Some people seem to think.
So,
now the look of Miller's Point, I believe, was quite different in your youth, like the wharves that all look different. How different did it look? Can you describe as it was when you were living there as a young
boy? Well, the wharves themselves were just full of ships. Walsh Bay especially, it was just a ship there all the time. That was our playground, jumping onto ships and playing, running around. Packet of biscuits or a box of biscuits out of the seaman's mess room. Sometimes we get chased and we just jump over the side and swim back to the wharf. They couldn't catch us.
Quite a lot of things, haven't they? So what about wool stores and things? Are the wool stores there then that they're no longer there, and were there bond stores?
Yeah, they're all gone now. Dalgetty's Wharf, Dalgetty's Wool Shed, which is the lead down on the Dalgetty's Wharf, where they load the wool from up top down the chutes and onto the ships.
What did they have there? What kind of a store was it?
It was just a great big store, monstrous big building, stacks and stacks of wool in it. And that was one of our playgrounds. We'd go in there and play. And the guys who worked in the wool sheds, I don't know what they were called, but if they caught us, they used to take our pants off and wipe this red dye on our testicles and send us home.
That's an interesting thing.
Because Mum would always know then, you've been to the wool sheds all day.
Was it a traditional thing, was it?
Apparently it was, yeah. Not many of us got caught, but ones who got caught, that's what they'd done to you.
I wonder how they would go down today. Right. Yeah. Was it dangerous there to work there? Was there like was there asbestos in these sheds or what? What do you remember about that?
Oh, I can't remember. I guess it would have been in them days. I don't know. Not that I know of. It was mainly just timber sheds, just thick, large timber. It was all built out of. I think there would have been asbestos there. Could have been.
What happened to those wool stores?
They're just gone. They're not there anymore.
What came in place of them?
Well, I think there's houses up in there now. On the top of Merriman Street.
It must have been when they built the tower, the MSB tower.
Yeah, that's right, the MSB tower. That's where it was there, wasn't it? Yeah. And they put the tower there and carved the big wall away. Yeah, that's right. Mm.
Now, some of the kids that I've spoken to, or some of the men I've spoken to who were kids then, had billy cart races and things. Were you one of them?
Oh, yes. That was a favourite. We used to race from the top of High Street, a street called Munn Street. Used to go all the way down into Dalgetty's Wharf, but had a very sharp bend on it, went round into Sussex Street, the Hungry Mile. We used to race down there. Kids had stayed halfway down, make sure there's no traffic coming, but there wasn't much traffic in them days, of course. But there was one day we built a billy cart, and be about half the size of this room, the box would have been. We got it from some store down in Erskine Street, carted it all the back home, put axles on it, wheels, and about 15 of us got in it. And down the hill we went. Well, we didn't turn the corner because it just wouldn't turn. So we went straight through the gates of Dalgetty's Wharf, big steel gates. There was quite a lot of people got hurt that day. I still got a scar up here, actually.
And on your cheek?
Yeah, underneath your chin there. It all fell out, just smashed.
They'd forgotten to design the steering, had they?
Yeah, it just wouldn't turn the speed we were going. When you just pull it with ropes, naturally, it just wouldn't turn the corner.
It must have been a very large billy cart to hold 15 of you.
Well, it was. I said it was about half the size of this room, this box.
Really?
Yeah, we had a name for it. I forget what it was called, though.
That's an interesting billy cart story. Yeah. So, now you live at number 30 High Street, was it?
Yeah, 30 High Street, yeah.
Did you have the top or the bottom?
With the bottom, yeah.
Can you describe the house as it was?
Oh, that little front veranda. They're exactly the same today as they were then. And a very long hall going through it. And there was three bedrooms down that hallway. And there was the main kitchen, living, dining room combined area. Old fuel stove there. We used to sit around every night, keep warm. The laundry, bathroom and kitchen was actually out in the laundry. That's where the stove was, the washing machine. We didn't have a washing machine, the old copper for boiling. The bathroom went off that, the toilet went off that. It was a very tidy pokey area, the cook, bath, wash, everything in the one room. Yeah.
And how many bedrooms were there in the
three,
house?
Three bedrooms.
So for seven children, plus your mum and your mum and dad?
Yeah.
So how many to a room were there for the kids?
Well, there's four boys in one room. There's mum and dad in the middle room. But my older sister married at the time I was growing up. So Shirley was in there. Then she got married and Pam came along and she went into that room then. So that's how it worked out. It worked. I don't know how, but it did.
So did you share a bed with another brother?
Oh, yeah, I did. I shared a bed with my brother, our eldest brother, Richard.
What was the sort of community feeling around then, Millers Point? And everyone was in pretty dire straits in a way, that there were not wealthy families, there were battlers and so on. So how did it all, how were the relations between the people?
Oh, quite good. They all got on well together. They never see an argument or anything like that. You just leave your front door open, you just wouldn't close it. People walk in and out and say hello, have a cup of tea and go again.
So what kind of entertainment was there for the men, say, after work? What would they do when they came home?
Oh, most of them go to the hotels. There wasn't much entertainment around them days for going and have a bet down the SP bookie on a Saturday.
Which SP bookie did your father use?
Oh, there's quite a few. I won't mention names. There's one up the road about three doors from us. Dad used to sit out in the back lane. He was a cockatoo. For years he'd done that.
Is this at the Palisade, isn't it?
No, in High Street, the back lane of High Street.
Which hotel was he associated with? This?
He reckoned the Palisade Hotel.
Your father did?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the closest one, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess it was.
Right, I heard of Sess Moore, who was a SB bookie, wasn't he?
Well, I wasn't going to mention his name, but he's the one who cockatooed for.
Right. Other people have already filled me in on him.
Okay.
Any stories about the SB bookie that you might have?
I used to run bets for Mum and Dad. They used to have their shilling each way, horse, on a Saturday. In them days, they used to pedal to Windmill Street, down in the back lane of Windmill Street, and take their little bets around. They'd write me out a bit of paper for me, and I'd take them around. And one day, I was going around, and the dog chased me, bit me, threw me off my bike, never got the bet on, and it won. And I got in the trouble, because I never got the bet on.
The horse won?
Yes, the horse won.
So, did you get any repercussions as a result of that?
Oh, it was the sore backside.
Was your father a gambling man?
I wouldn't say he was a gambler. He'd love to have a little bet, yeah, of course. I mean, they never had much money to bet with, but Saturdays they loved to have a little punt.
Why not, why not?
Even Mum did.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she used to have a shilling here and there.
Did Mum get together with the other mothers in the neighbourhood and after work that they socialise or what?
The only socialise Mum would have ever done was with the church, you know, the other women. That was her life, really, the church.
Right. Do you remember the name of the priests and the nuns and so on at the church?
Oh, yes, you've mostly heard of course, Sister Antoinette. Some of the others I can't remember. Father Smith. No, I can't remember all of them, but...
What was Sister Antoinette like?
She's a lovely lady. Ah, beautiful. I believe she's still alive. Have you heard that?
Well, I've heard it, but I believe she must be over 100 if she's alive.
Turned 100 this year, I think, someone was telling me.
She's in a nursing home somewhere, is she?
I think so, yeah.
You don't know yourself where?
No.
No. Okay. Now, you told me before when I spoke to you on the phone, when you described the house at 30 High Street, about the backyard and the clothesline, and you told me a story about the clothesline. Can you tell me that again?
Yeah, the clothesline used to be out in the back lane. It wasn't in the yard of the house. They're just on wooden sticks, posts with wire, thin wire running off, and that's where they hung their washing. And I wasn't around this time that it happened, but a drunken seaman, apparently was walking down the lane going back to his ship, and got caught up in the clothesline and accidentally hung himself. So the councils, or the Maritime Service Board, who run the houses, they took them all away and made people put lines in their yards.
Right, definitely dangerous.
Oh, well, it turned out to be that way, yeah, but it was apparently going for many years until this happened.
Right. Did you have hawkers coming to the street selling you things like clothes bags like in the olden days?
Oh, yeah, you always bought your ice for the old ice box. The rabbit man had come round. The fruit and veggie man would come around his little truck and sell fruit and vegetables. And there's one particular guy who used to come, John the Chinaman. He's a very large man. He used to carry two big suitcases with him. Mum used to buy clothes off him, mainly for the children. And she'd pay him something like 15 cents, 1/6 as it is, them days a week. That's how she'd pay her things off as she bought clothes. And he'd come every Saturday morning, this chap.
Just a second to make an announcement. That's the end of tape number MPFH28, side A. This is the start of tape number MPFH28, side B. Now, the council had an unusual way, apparently, of collecting the rubbish. How was it? Do you remember that?
Yeah, they just had open trucks, and there'd be about 6 garbage workers. And they just have a great big hessian bag, not a bag, just a big hessian cloth. And they just walk up to our street, our lane, empty the garbage out, which is just in the lane between big, large tins, and throw it straight into the hessian bag and drag it up to the next one. And whoever lived upstairs, they should throw it down the chute and it'd land in the garbage tin. And just thrown onto this, then when it got enough garbage in it, they'd all pick it up, 6 of them, and throw it into the truck. And go and do some more. It was time consuming, just dragging this hessian along all the time.
That's a strange one.
Yeah.
I wonder how that'd go over today with the occupational health and safety rules.
Health.
Now, tell me a little bit about the schools that you attended. Where did you start off?
Kindergarten was down in, it was in High Street. I can't think of the name of the place was.
Lance, wasn't it?
Lance, yeah. Lance Kindergarten. I went there when I was a youngster, of course. And I always remember that place because they used to give you milk every day. But in the milk, they used to put fish emulsion. It was something to do with your health, it was. Fish emulsion, some emulsion. It was horrible. Anyhow, after we left there, we were sent to St. Bridget's School. And from there, you went to St. Patrick's at Churchill. That's where I finished off my schooling there at St. Patrick's.
To what grade did you go?
Oh, I didn't go that far. Second year, I think it was, or first year. I was 14 and I left school.
Was that the usual thing to do in those days?
Yeah, a lot of people stayed on a bit longer and got better education. I never did. I actually wasn't even 14 when I left because I had to get a permit to leave school. Because I went into a butcher shop originally when I was 14, do an apprenticeship of butchers, but I didn't like it, so I left. And when I turned 15, that's when I joined Stannard Brothers on the small ferries.
Right. What was your job there with Stannard Brothers?
At 15, he was a junior deckhand and used to do little ferry runs around the harbour. They had a fleet of ferries, six ferries, just doing ferry services all around the harbour. Workers up to Cockatoo. Workers from Balmain to the old Manly Ferry Yard at Cremorne. Workers down to Garden Island, ferry runs down to there.
So it was mainly transport for waterside workers, was it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, mainly waterside workers. Used to take the coal lumpers up to Ball's Head to load the coal ships. They used to get to have a pick up there, the same as up the seamen had, and they were all transported up there every day and brought back every night by ferry.
How big were those ferries?
Oh, about 60 foot long.
So quite sizable then.
Oh, not compared to the big ones today, no.
Yeah. So how many men would you transport at one time, say?
Oh, different sizes. Some were double-deckers. They'd carry up to 250. The little ones, they carry 100, 110.
So you were actually a deckhand, were you?
Yeah, deckhand. On matter of fact, the old Lithgow. She's still floating around the harbour today.
That was called the Lithgow, wasn't
Lithgow,
it?
Lithgow, yeah. All Stannard's launches were called after country towns.
Were they a good company to work for, Stannard's?
Great company, yeah. Yeah, family company, yeah.
And the pay was reasonable, was it?
Yeah, because you got paid overtime and you always look forward to working the weekend, so you get a bit extra.
And how did you get your training for that? Did they train you on the boats? Or?
Oh, yeah, they just trained you. All the older guys who worked there trained you. So when I first started the Stannards, they were at the old Opera House, where the Opera House stands today. That's where their base was, which was the old Fort Macquarie where the tram sheds were. And now they're in Balmain, yeah, today. It's not owned by Stannard Brothers anymore.
So you're actually continuing the family tradition of working on the water. Did you like the work?
Oh, I still do, today, yeah.
How long did you actually work with Stannards?
I was with them for 8 years. And I left and went down to Garden Island to work on their tugs down at Garden Island. I was there for 30 years and I left there some 8 years ago and I'm back with Stannard Brothers now for the last 8 years, which is actually now owned by Adsteam, not Stannards.
Right, I see.
A little story I tell you about Stannards. When we were down at Circular Quay, where the old water police used to be, old Albie Stannard, who was the original father of the Stannard's company, asked me to wash his car for him, which I did. He wasn't a boss, he used to just walk around. His son used to run it. So I washed it, and he gave me a pound. This was in 1959, 1960. It was a lot of money. Gee, this is a good job. And now some 20-odd years later, my son went to work there, the same place. And old Albie happened to be there this day. He said, "Could you wash me car, son?" He said, "Sure." Washed his car for him, and he gave him $2. So the price never went up in all that time.
Well, you got the best part of the bucket. He didn't get any more generous as he went on.
That's right.
Okay. So any incidents that you can remember that happened at work? If anything stands out? Like,
there's a couple of jets actually flying across the harbour doing their manoeuvres and whatever, and one of them tipped and went into the water just off Fort Denison. And one of the guys who was driving one of the launches to a timetable at a ship, he went across to it to see if he could help, and he had a big black American Eagle on the back of the launch with him. He was bringing him off the ship. He said, "You put that cigarette out, please." He said, "This might be all fuel around there." The American guy said, "Yeah, sure, guy." Threw it straight in the drink. Boom.
Caught fire.
Yeah.
Right. The actual jet plane, was it an Air Force plane?
Navy Air Force, yeah, yeah.
Did the guy survive?
Yeah, he got out of it, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Anything else? Any other anecdotes?
Oh, I remember chasing a whale in the corner of Jeffrey Street in a ferry. He was stuck in the corner. It was only a baby whale. He was quite big, really, but he couldn't get out of the shallows in there. So the skipper, I was only the deckhand at the time, he just went around and kept nudging him with the bow of the ferry and got him out. And away he went.
That's interesting. You don't see too many whales in Sydney Harbour anymore.
Oh, yes, you do.
You do?
Yeah, just recently.
Mm. You saw one?
I have, yeah. Sydney Heads is full of them. Not full of them, but there's you get your two and three coming now and again.
All right. Thanks for telling
me. Only 2 years ago, there was two underneath Harbour Ridge. Two whales, just 2 years ago.
All right. Good, thanks. Now, going back to Miller's Point and the kind of your childhood again, there's a couple of more questions I want to ask you about your paper run. Tell me about your paper run.
Oh, yes. Nearly everyone had a paper run, I guess. And the paper run was you'd go down all the ships and sell all your papers and magazines. And the English ships were pretty hard. They wouldn't buy. And they just wouldn't tip you. It was a pretty hard thing. You never got paid very much for the day doing your paper run. The Americans were great. They'd buy all your magazines. Didn't matter what you had, they'd just buy them. And they tip you very well, too. And it was always good fun.
So you sold lots of papers?
Yes, yes.
How did you get to the ships?
Walk, just walk. Big leather strap.
From the wharf, you mean? Or
from the paper shop to the wharf?
Yeah.
Just walk?
Yes, walk. Because yeah. You told me a story about walking at low tide through the water at Darling Harbour. What was all that about?
Well, if it's a very low tide, you can walk from one Walsh Bay, right up Walsh Bay, along Darling Harbour, up into Cockle Bay, which is now the playground of the yuppies, up around past the old goods yards where the trains used to meet, then back up through Piermont. And we walked the whole way under every wharf at low tide. You just couldn't do it today because most of the piles are gone. They're just all concrete wharves now.
So you actually walked below that?
We walked, yeah, all the way around.
At water level?
Yeah, well, you was in about 3 inches of water. It had to be low tide. You couldn't do it at high tide. And just walked all the way.
Right, interesting. There's another prank that you told me about before, which was to do with the clock tower. What was that one?
Yeah, on Darling Harbour again, right opposite High Street, used to be a massive big clock. I think it was Makarrah McEachin's Wharf. And everyone looks at the clock naturally, and one day the hands start to be moving round and round and round. And no one could work out what it was. So they eventually found out that it was my brother who was up in the clock tower turning the cogs round. So down come the police, the fire brigade, and that ladder's up there trying to get him out. But he'd already beat him to the punch. He was out. And he was standing up in the back lane at Kent Street watching him.
Was he trying to advance the time, was he?
Yeah.
He was in a hurry, was he?
Yeah.
What time did the pubs close in your day?
Oh, 6 o'clock in the very young early days, yeah. 6 o'clock swill.
So was there a lot of activity at 6 o'clock?
Yeah, there's people everywhere. Because naturally we were always too young that time to go and have a beer or anything. We used to sit around the corners watching.
Was alcohol a bit of a problem for the guys there?
I wouldn't say it was a problem. I'd say it was an enjoyment.
Okay. Now, there was some friction and fights between some of the Australian sailors and the English ones, weren't there?
Yeah, it was an Anzac Day. And Dominion Monarch was tied up at Dalgetty's Wharf at the bottom of Munn Street. And a couple of seamen went into the Lord Nelson Hotel and started playing the guitar and singing songs which is not Anzac Day songs. So a couple of the guys took offence to it and gave them a couple of belts and sent them off. But within 5 minutes, the whole crew of the ship come marching up Munn Street. Well, it was on for young and old. There's about 300 off this ship come up. And then the guys from Miller's Point, they just bashed the hell out of them, sent them all the way back down Munn Street. And two paddy wagons turned up and they just saw there was that many people there. They said, oh, we're getting out of here. So they left. And it was all over in about 3 hours.
3 hours of fighting?
Yep.
Good. So how many Aussies were involved in that fight against those 300 Englishmen?
Yeah, about 40, 50, I guess.
And they beat them?
Yep.
It must have been tough then.
Oh, yeah.
Was it common to see that kind of thing happening in the streets?
We used to see a lot of fights, yeah. Not common, say it was common, but it's good to see a good stoush every now and again.
Right. Now, what was Christmas like at Miller's Point? Christmas Day, what did you do on that day?
Well, only the guys would all head down for Central Steps, which we call the Met, the Metal Wharf. It was a bit like Bondi Beach down there on Christmas Day. They all had their toys, their bikes, rubber tyres. We'd all swim for the rest of the day and play around and eventually get home for Christmas dinner late. Well, that was a great place, the old Met.
So did the families come together or was it just everyone had his own family come to the house on Christmas Day? Or was there a communal...
It was just families stay together, yeah.
Do you have full memories of Christmas Day?
Yeah, it was always a great day. We used to get chickens for lunch and we never had chickens during the year.
Never?
No.
What, you couldn't afford
them? Couldn't afford them.
Right.
Dad used to raise them in the backyard, buy them down the markets for... And the tuppence each, where they were as chickens, raise them by the heater during the winter, then they're out in the backyard when the summer months come, raise them, come Christmas Day, you chop the heads off and we'd eat them. That was Christmas lunch.
Huh. Interesting. So the chickens were expensive, were they?
Yeah. We just never bought them like you do today, frozen or in the shops or anything. Ever saw chickens around.
Right. Anyone kept chickens in Miller's Point, apart from your dad? Was it fairly common or what?
Oh, I guess other people did. I'm not sure, yeah.
Right. Now, what happened in terms of technology on the wharves? I mean, over time, everything improved and things changed, and as the wharf technology changed, were you part of all that changing technology? Did you notice much of it?
Oh, yeah, it was a big change over the years. When Tom I started, just containerisation changed everything. The ships would stay in for, a week. And we used to get a lot of work because the ships at anchor down in the harbour. There'd be at least six or seven ships at anchor and we'd have to run timetables down to them, take stores down to them, change their laundry, bring it backwards and forward. Customs would be going down, agents. So it kept all the smaller launches in them days very busy. But today they go straight to the wharf, unload in 12 to 24 hours and they're gone. So it's too quick a turnover today, which is good, I guess.
So when those ships used to come into port... Did the some of the men on them look for accommodation in the city?
No, they always lived on board.
Lived on board still.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. Did you make friends with any of those sort of characters if they were there for 2 or 3 weeks? Did they come much ashore or not?
No, not really. I don't think so, no. The people next door, they made friends with some guys off a New Guinea ship. He was an islander. They seemed to have made friends with him. Every time he came, they always came up and stayed with them or had a meal with them.
Did you ever get invited on board those ships?
Yeah, we used to go on quite a lot, especially the Burns Phillips ships. My uncle, he was a seaman on there. We used to go on there and he'd feed us up with ice cream and things like that.
Right.
Which there was plenty of.
Now, how long did you live at 30 High Street?
Till I was 20, then I got married and left.
So tell me a little bit about how you met your wife.
Oh. At a dance. No, it wasn't. It was at a party in Kingsford. She worked on Botany Road. I can't think of it. Elite Furniture. And she the girl she worked with was engaged to my mate. And they got talking and said we'd all go out one night, which we did, and that's how it started.
Right. So she's not from Millers Point?
No. She's actually born in Urala, up near Armidale. And they moved down to Sydney and went to Botany. That's where Judith lived.
So when you got married, you moved out of the area, did you?
Yes, we moved out and went to Mascot, lived in Mascot for a few years, then up to Botany for about 12 years, I guess, then moved out here.
Right. How many children do you have now?
Two, Jeffrey, boy, and Lisa.
Right. You said one of them is also involved with the waterfront, or?
Yeah, Jeff's a skipper on the Manly ferries.
Right. Good. Are you enjoying it too?
Yes, he loves it, yeah.
Right. Now, talking about Millers Point again as a suburb, what sort of physical changes were there to Millers Point, like the demolition of any heritage buildings or changes to the finger wharves while you were there for those 20 years? What did you see change? Apart from, you've already told me about the wool stores disappearing. Were there any other physical changes to the place?
Yeah, I guess Walsh Bay itself, that's changed a hell of a lot. There's no shipping goes there whatsoever now, and it's all just apartments. And Cockle Bay, that's all changed. It'd just be full of ships there all the time. We'd be taking ships in and out of there all the time. Now it's just all restaurants and movie houses.
And how do you feel about all that?
I don't like it at all. I think it's bad what they've done. They're going to start doing it again now with Darling Harbour from the Millers Point down.
Well, there's a plan now to, when Patrick's go, to use that space for putting an extra 25,000 people in. What do you think that's going to do to Millers Point?
I think it'll ruin it. It'd just be terrible. There'd be no heritage left whatsoever. It should be left the way it is.
So what's your opinion of the sort of demise of Sydney as a working harbour? It's sort of going out the window, that concept.
I think it's wrong what they're doing, because they want to make it a leisure harbour instead of a working harbour. And if you look at people who travel on Sydney Harbour, they like to look at that sort of thing, that see the ships come in and go out and the tugboats moving around, the barges. They just don't want to look at someone's big house down in Rose Bay. They want to see something that's going, moving, working.
Right. Yeah, that's a shame, I think, too. So what do you think the future of Millers Point's looking like, as far as you're concerned? How do you see it?
It doesn't look good, but things have got to move on, I guess, at the same time. But I'm not happy with it, but it'll happen.
Right. Yeah, well, there's more residential coming and less port activity.
Yep.
So you have good memories now still of Millers Point? What do you think about when I say Millers Point? What kind of images come in your mind?
Oh, I still like it. I go down there at least once a year. We go down and have a bit of a reunion with all the old friends and mates. But it'll still be Millers Point.
Do you think it'll ever come back to what it used to be?
Never, no.
Right, too late for that, huh? Now, Des, I believe you've got a story about some elephants. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, but once a year the ship Wanganella used to come in from New Zealand, bring the Worth Brothers Circus across to Sydney. And when they unloaded all the animals off the ship, they used to put them underneath what we used to call the arches, the Hungry Miles full of the arches. And that's where they store all the animals. They sit them there for about 2 days. And then after 2 days, they'd march the whole circus up to Prince Alfred Park. And for every year I can remember, my brother used to jump on the lead elephant and they'd let him lead him all the way through the city up into Prince Alfred Park. It was always a good time to wait for the circus to come to town.
He was the elephant rider.
Yeah, used to sit him up the front, on top of him. That's good. No one else was allowed to, only him. I don't know why.
I've had some stories told to me by other people who've seen the elephants unloaded with cranes and things from the ships. Would that be right?
Yeah, they unload them with the big ship's cranes, yeah.
Maybe it's weird seeing tiger or something being lifted or an elephant.
Well, they were in cages. The elephants just had big straps around them and come off. Yeah. It was always a yearly thing. You'd wait for the circus to come in and you could smell it.
Would your parents take you to the circus?
Sorry?
Would you be taken to the circus as a kid?
No, I don't think I ever went to the circus, no. That was our circus time once a year.
Now, your parents, after you left Mellis Point in 1964, your parents stayed on. Tell me what kind of life they had after you left.
Yes, they stayed on. Mum was a diabetic and she got glaucoma and she lost her eyesight there for a long, long time. My other brothers, well, two of them were still living there. My eldest brother died earlier. But John and Bobby lived there with her. And they were at sea most of the time when they came back. So then, actually, they both lived there on their own for some 20 years before they both died. And they both died on Miller's Point.
And what about your father? When did he die?
I was in the mid-80s. But he was actually in a nursing home when he did die. Yeah. But he was 83, I think, when he died.
Right, okay. So the after you left Miller's Point, did you have much connection with the suburbs after you've left?
Oh, yes. We used to go back at least once a week, and just, my children love going down there. They love Miller's Point. Yeah, we'd always try and go down once a week because we never had a car until heavens above. But when we did get one, we made sure we went down every day. Not every day, every second, third day.
And what would you do down there?
Oh, we just sit and talk, and I go up the pub with my brothers, and leave Judith home with Mum.
Right. So what sort of feelings do you have now about Miller's Point? What sort of memories come back?
Oh, that's hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't want to live there today. There's nothing like it was then days. No, not the same.
So what's changed there then?
The people have changed. It's not the local people that was there years ago, the working class people. I guess there's still some working class people down there, but not anymore. There's just too many people moved in. Once the Maritime Service Board sort of sold up and give it to the Housing Commission, I think it's called, things changed then.
Right, yeah, there's lots of new people coming in now, which are basically public housing tenants. And what do you think that's doing to the suburb? Is it changing it at all?
Well, I would like to say on that because I don't know who they are even.
Right, sure. You haven't been living there for 41 years, isn't it?
That's right, 41 years, yeah.
Do you miss it?
Yes. Yeah, I do. Especially when we were young growing up. That's the part you missed. I don't think the kids do what we've done today. We were pretty naughty kids, I think. They used to say, look out, here comes the grey boys.
Okay, anything else you want to talk about, Des? We've covered most of my questions.
Oh, I must think of something later, but not at the moment, I can't.
Okay, well, thanks very much for the interview. It's been very valuable. So this is then the end of the interview with Des Grey and the end of take number MPFH 28 side B.